right to the meat of the presentation. Just as a reminder for those who weren't here before, I'm Mike Spaeth. I'm a town principal planner and the town's primary reviewer for the application. Just to kind of orient folks where we are in the process, tonight we're at the second neighborhood meeting. We have received a formal submittal from the applicant, and we've gone back and forth on a couple iterations of that to achieve code compliance. And so now that that's reached code compliance, we're bringing it back to the neighbors to have a conversation about what that revised design looks like. We are anticipating that the project will move forward to the Planning and Zoning Commission in March, and then council in April. Of course, those are tentative dates. So again, the purpose for tonight's meeting is to really introduce that revised project to the folks who joined us this evening. We do have a few folks online who are listening in as well, so they'll be able to see the presentation and hear the conversation tonight as well. So I'm just going to do a brief overview of where we've come to date. Then we're going to turn it over to the applicant and have him really address the key issues that came out of that first neighborhood meeting that were traffic and screening of the use. And then we'll turn it over to you folks and have a conversation about any questions or comments or thoughts that you may have, any recommendations that could serve as a mitigation factor for any issues that you might see. And then again, we'll just summarize with the upcoming meetings moving forward. So again, just to orient everyone, I think you're all familiar with where the property is located, but it's shown here in yellow, just west of the Caliber Collision, two properties and the Brake Masters, and then of course the Oro Valley Adult Medicine is just to the east of the subject property. Again, the applicant's request is for a conditional use permit to allow a self-storage facility as well as an RV storage facility just immediately north of Pushview Lane. The conditional use permit is required for the self-storage component, and then a conceptual site and landscape plan will be required for both components. The self-storage facility is, again, a little over 100,000 square feet with a building height of about 30 feet and two stories. There's two access points. We'll be utilizing the existing access points within the center, so no changes to those. And again, the pedestrian connections that are there will also be tied into. The RV storage is going to be fully screened with one access point off the main PAL there in the shopping center. Of course, buffer yards, screening, and water harvesting areas will also be included. Again, just as a reminder for staff review, as part of a conditional use permit, there is an extra level of scrutiny that's done to make sure that the site is really appropriate for the proposed use and that any mitigation that's necessary has been factored in. These are the criteria that we look at as part of that code compliance evaluation, and conceptual site plans and landscape plans are reviewed for conformance with the criteria listed on screen. Well, that was short for my presentation. I'm going to go ahead and pull yours up, and we'll get rolling. Give me just a sec.
So a horse walks into a bar. Thank you, Mr. Spaeth. Well, good evening. My name is Paul Oland. I'm here representing the property owner and the applicant. And I will not take a lot of time either. I just wanted to share several slides showing where we were and where we're at and what we're now proposing. So what is in front of you on the screen right now is actually the site plan that was presented at the last neighborhood meeting a number of months ago. Primary concerns we had we heard at that hearing had to do with this shared access. It's an arrow now. Sorry about that. this shared access right here, which is of course an existing curb cut there that was designed to serve both properties. But the concern that we heard at the last hearing was that the clientele of this medical office next door might not mix very well with larger truck traffic that might be associated with this storage use. And so the request was made to look at ways to separate that access out. So we've done that. That'll be shown on the next slide also. The other concern we heard was having to do with this edge right here. And this is going to be an arrow, but just ignore the arrow. But that edge between the medical office and this facility here, just in terms of screening, privacy, there was a concern about safety as well, because the area behind that medical office is a little bit secluded. So there was concern expressed there. And so that was another one of our action items here, our to-do list to try to address those concerns. So what we did on the next slide here, I'll get rid of these green things. So this is the revised site plan. Our first attempt actually brought in our driveway pretty much right next to this one, kind of like that. We to provide that separation, some more landscaping and things like that. But working with town staff, there was some concern that was still a little bit too close, and that created more intersections in this small area than was really ideal. So we edited that, and now we have it over right in front of the building right here. So that's actually an existing curb cut that's already there that was intended to serve those lots that are to the north. And we brought that access around so that it's nowhere near the access for the medical office. The other thing we did was we took the entire development footprint, basically the building, all the parking, the traffic areas, and slid it east as far as we could, given setbacks and other things. So now there's along this edge right here. This arrow is killing me. This edge. We've got a lot more room. We're going to add landscaping. We're also going to add a 6-foot screen wall that will provide, total visual blockage between that medical office and us. So that plus the landscaping, I think, provides the buffering that was, to address that concern that we heard last time. Another thing that we've been working with staff on, although I don't remember it being expressed as a particular concern at the last neighborhood meeting, just had to do with the visibility of the RVs that will be parked in there. And so we've worked with staff to come up with a screening plan with a decorative wall that I'll show you on a subsequent slide here that achieves the code compliance screening. Last thing we added was just sort of a nod to the fact that there is an existing traffic issue associated with these auto uses to the east. So what we did was we added several on-street parking spaces there. I mean, pull off, but there'll be parallel parking there just to provide a little bit of relief. I know that group is in the middle of trying to address that code violation as well, but this should soften the impact and provide a little more parking for the future anyway. So those are the main changes. One more thing, sorry. We actually added a screen wall along the back edge too to provide some visual screening between that CDO River Park path and our development. So this is updated architecture. It looks pretty similar to what we presented last time, and that's because what we presented last time was very close to being acceptable and code compliant. So moved some of the features around, but essentially it's the same. We've still got a mix of materials, a mix of geometry. We've got a little articulation on the facade, also on the roof line. We've got different roof treatments depending on the parapet or the little bit of tile work there. played around with some of the glazing as well. Some of the windows are real windows. Some of the windows are decorative windows. We retained the shade trellis out front there, and then normal landscaping and everything all around the building. This is more of an informational graphic that just shows the different sides of the buildings. I threw this in here just in case anybody had any specific questions, but this is just a elevation view of each edge of that building. So if there are any questions, we can refer back to this. And then I mentioned the RV screen wall that'll be encircling the entire RV parking area. So this wall does vary in height, and we've worked with staff to do visual analyses from surrounding pedestrian areas to make sure that even the tallest potential RVs in there will be screened adequately from those pedestrian areas. So that, along with additional landscaping, because if you're familiar with the site, there's some landscaping around the edge of this this particular parcel, but not a ton. So we'll be supplementing that, bringing all those landscape edges up to code compliance. And that's really all I have in terms of updates, and happy to answer questions.
All right. Well, thank you, Mr. Oland. We do have a few people on Zoom. I recognize a few of the names, but not all of them. So if you're a Zoom participant, you'll notice that you are currently on mute. When we turn it over to the question and answer period here, if you have a question, please go ahead and raise your hand by clicking on the icon that you see outlined in yellow here. It may be on the top or bottom of your screen, depending on what device you're using. If you're participating via phone, which I don't see that anybody is, you'll raise your hand by using *9. Of course, those of you here in the room, you can simply just raise your hand, and we'll try and go back and forth. If we do have any questions, I'll keep an eye on the Zoom list there to make sure that folks are given equal opportunity. So for the three folks who are not associated with the town or the applicant, if you have questions, yes, please go right ahead.
Have we looked at the traffic pattern and how that will affect coming off Bushview and Oracle and the RVs and all of that pulling in? And has that been studied at all? That particular intersection, there's been a couple deaths recently. There's been a few accidents. My patients tell me it sometimes takes them two red lights in the morning to get through. So, has anyone looked at the effect the moving trucks, the RVs, and all of that will have at that intersection?
Sure. We'll let Mr. Olin answer that, and then Mr. Laws is here from the engineering department as well, who can add some detail if necessary.
Sure. Yeah, we did look at that, and the fact of the matter is that self-storage is an extremely low traffic generator, probably much lower than if these individual lots were developed as individual businesses. Way less traffic. And most people come in, drop off their stuff. There's really not a lot of large vehicles. Most people come in with either their personal vehicles or, medium-sized U-Hauls, that kind of thing. It's not like there's moving trucks coming in and out of here. So, we did look at that. And like I said, there's plenty of capacity, and it's a very low impact on traffic.
One thing I was told when we purchased the lot is that eventually the more businesses that were going to be put in that, there might be the need for a traffic light in Mercado del Rio and Bushview. Has there been any discussions about life storage? Since life storage will be taking up six of the lots in that center, it didn't seem appropriate that life storage would pay for the traffic.
So the thing about traffic lights is you only install them if they're warranted. Otherwise, they're a liability. And it's a traffic light here is nowhere near warranted, so it wouldn't be a requirement anyway. So the way traffic reports work in that term is they take the existing traffic load that's out there during peak hours, right? And they look at weekday and weekend, figure out when's the peaks. And then they add in the expected traffic from our development, and that's all we're actually responsible for. And if our development pushes the levels of service below the thresholds that the town has, then we have to provide some sort of mitigation. And at that point, it's up to the traffic engineers in the town to figure out what would be the correct technical mitigation for that. They also run a signal warrant analysis that measures a bunch of different factors and provides grades and different criteria. And if it doesn't meet the warrant requirements, it just doesn't meet it. So, and then what happens in the future? Who knows?
Right. So if memory serves, what happened there is that when this was actually approved back in 2003, there was a requirement for the trailhead to be put in much sooner than it actually did. So when you came on, which I believe was 2012, 2011, is that about
18.
Right? 18. Okay, much further along. My apologies. So we as staff actually realized that that trailhead was supposed to have been built by, it was like 5 years after the development plan was approved, which would have been about 2008. It hadn't been by the time you came along, and so that was how the town was working with the developers at that time to make sure that that trailhead was installed per code. So I don't know specifically how that would be handled. Are you asking if you would get like a reimbursement from new development that comes in? Or?
No, I'm looking at the cost that we all pay for the division.
Sure.
And I mean, it wasn't like I just had to give a few thousand dollars.
Right.
We were told we could not move into our building until
right.
that trailhead was complete.
Correct.
So it was very serious.
Mm-hmm.
And so now we have someone who's going to be building six lots, and it doesn't seem like the town is giving them any requirements for contribution to the division, including if the traffic light 2 years, 3 years from now is necessary. It doesn't seem like they're obligated to do anything about that.
Right. So I can't speak to the traffic light one because I don't know what the signal warrants are, but I do know that, as Mr. Oland said, the warrants have not been met at this point for that light. And this is actually a lower traffic generating use than what the other pads would have been. So in all actuality, whatever those warrants may have been, if all six lots have developed, it's actually going down from a traffic generation perspective, right? So knowing that the warrants haven't been met and knowing that this is a lower traffic generating use, obviously we can conclude that the warrants are not going to be met per this project. Right now, as Ms. Rowland said, what happens in the future, of course, we don't know. You know, the site might develop, and maybe at some point it does trigger a warrant for a signal. I'm guessing it probably won't. It's very, very unlikely that it will, but you can never say never, of course. So that's a conversation for another time, not necessarily for this particular one. I don't have more of a definitive answer on the trailhead question. I know Mr. Donleys were part of that, so.
So, I'm Paula Donley. This is my husband, Kit. We're the original owners. We're not involved. We're not owners, but we were developers. Yeah. Those property owners of those six lots paid significantly for that trailhead. Mm-hmm. So, that's been met by them. Also, something.
But not by Life Storage.
No, but those lots met that requirement. They paid their fair share.
Mm-hmm.
So they're selling that, so they already paid it. One of the things
but
that
they're
you
selling it to something that wasn't even supposed to be built.
It is. It's an allowed use.
No,
it
that's
just,
why we're here.
It's an allowed use, which can have other conditions. The other thing I wanted to say is what was required and is required of any commercial project is that you either contribute to minimum in the art fund, or you give 1% of your hard building costs towards art, but all the art was not met by the original developers, so you weren't asked to pay into an art project or for your own project. You weren't asked for that. So you have an advantage there. You have it for them.
Right. So to answer your question, the original property owner who owns these lots paid their share towards the trailhead. So if they want to work out an agreement between them and the purchasers here, Life Storage, that's a private conversation, of course. So the person in charge of the owner of this property has done their fair share of that contribution. I hope that answers your question.
So what is to stop the other lots from selling to similar businesses?
The town is not involved in who property owners sell their lots to. If it's a question of a new entitlement, or a new use that's not permitted, that's where the town is involved. But when there's private contracts between a property owner and a potential purchaser, the town is not involved in that transaction. Does anybody else have any questions? Otherwise, I'm happy to keep answering any of yours. Yes?
A couple of questions. You mentioned screen walls around all the facilities and in the back and stuff like that. What are you doing since you only have one or two people managing this property? What are you doing for security?
Just rolling.
You guys want to talk about security?
Yeah, so we
here.
Would you mind coming up here, Nate?
Thanks. Yeah, just introduce yourself. Yes.
So we typically do state-of-the-art, so it'll be on all perimeters, so every corner. We also do lighting. Obviously, the lighting would need to work with the town, but we will have security cameras throughout the facility on the outside.
I guess my concern is that you're creating a large walled area that has very few people managing it, and this area is certainly subject to lots of people walking or access to it. And as your design and gone through the police department for their comments and concerns associated with 6-foot walls around the storage facility?
Yes, the police department is part of the development committee who reviews all of these applications, and they have not indicated that they have concerns about any of that. As Mr. Daniel had mentioned, obviously we have code requirements that will establish that those areas are properly lighted from a security perspective as well. I understand there will be staff on site, so I presume there's some level of staff observance of the property as part of their duties. I don't know if that's something that maybe you can elaborate on, but yes, that has been reviewed by the police department as well.
Okay. The next question I have is concerning parking. You added that little cutout, but I was in that area on Friday at 1:00, and I counted over 60 cars, both on the road and parked in the dirt lot, and the cars are double parked along the entryway. You can only have one-way traffic going by. What's going to be done about that?
Sure, absolutely. So we are also concurrently working with the owners of Caliber Collision, just immediately east of this, because obviously the cars being parked on this lot are associated mostly with that business. So they are processing an amendment to a conditional use permit for that property as well that is likely to go concurrently with this one. And the aim of that redesign is to add additional storage capacity on their property behind a screened wall that will allow them to be able to take whatever overflow they have and keep it on their property. So they're not parking it on lots that they don't own or lots that aren't affiliated with their business. So That's an ongoing effort. We've actually reached out to the owners of Caliber Collision because we have also observed a number of cars parked there even after hours, which of course is not allowed by code. So we're working with them to get that remedied in the meantime while we're working towards a long-term solution for that. As part of that conditional use permit, there will of course be conditions on there that restrict off-site parking as a condition of approval for that use permit, so that, you know, in a couple years' time, we're not back revisiting the same issue. We're going to address that as part of that.
My question, I think, is a little bit, this was not, it was nowhere near at the capacity that I've noticed in that parked in the dirt lot earlier. And I don't know that you can fit 60 cars, 60 more parking spaces, plus whatever was off where people had gone to lunch in the area that they're proposing to use for a parking lot.
Sure, and so that's where the conditions will be added as part of that use permit that will not allow off-site parking, because we share that concern too. So they're going to do as much as possible to be able to accommodate as many cars as possible, but you're right. At some point, you may reach a threshold where you've just got too many cars. And so that's going to be a condition of that use permit, that if that happens, those cars are stored somewhere else. They're not stored here.
You had a condition back in 2003 when this thing was approved that no vehicles were going to be allowed to be visible from push-view lane, that no vehicles were going to be able to be stored on the roads going into the Mercado del Rio center. And that condition has never been enforced up till last year when somebody made a complaint.
So there is, as you know, a active zoning violation because of that very issue. So
yes.
It's
been a year.
And that's because we are working with the representatives of Caliber Collision to get that addressed. So we've been working through the process of getting the CUP application ready and code compliant to bring to commission and council, as well as a redesigned site for them. So we are working through that, but we're aware of that issue, and we wanted to see it resolved as soon as possible as well.
Okay, the next question is more on your architecture, where you had show the windows and the cutouts in the front that are blanked off. Paul, do you want to show that page?
Other way.
The other one. Yeah. Carlos, would you mind switching to the other presentation? I'm sorry. Could you switch to the other presentation, please?
But I guess my comment is,
thank you.
You know, where you see all the blank windows and the blank archways and stuff like that, if you look at the facility that's on Oracle Road by Calle Concordia, they did the same sort of thing. And there's no real features, you know, it doesn't fit architecturally with those, when you have those arches and don't have any doors or anything of that sort. You know, just a personal comment there. It says, you know, if you look at these buildings as a storage facility, I understand that you don't need windows, you don't need all that stuff, and basically it's a big box, and you're trying to add something to break up that big box, and I'm not sure that the features that you've identified do that.
Mercado del Rio has its own architectural standards that I actually wrote. And it went through the town process, it was approved by the town, but it is its own standard.
Yep.
And this surpasses that standard. I reviewed this. It surpasses the standards. Actually, this building has much more detail than most of the buildings currently there, except the Mahan Street Salon, maybe. But this surpasses all of the requirements about
our attention. So are you on the HOA now?
I am not a member of the HOA.
So you're not involved at all?
Well, I wrote the architectural standards. I wrote the sign standards, which, again, was approved by the town. So the sign code that's for Mercado del Rio is separate than the town standard. So in certain projects, you can do that. So it was large enough to do that. So this surpasses that.
But I guess my concern is, you know, the architecture, if I recall the architecture plans that were presented many, many years ago, there was nothing in there that talked about a 100,000 square foot building.
Actually, the CC&Rs address the size of lots, and what the CC&Rs specifically speak to is that lots could be combined without any approval, without the HOA approval, actually it's the POA, Property Owners Association approval, or anything, and if the whole project was envisioned that way to give flexibility for the size of a project. So that's actually in the CC&Rs.
Okay. How do I get access to the CC&Rs? Because I'm a owner and
we'll send them to you immediately.
You should have had them when you purchased.
How come no one told me that when I was purchasing?
Well, I don't know who you bought it from, but it should have been part of your purchase.
Probably.
So your building was reviewed against that same architecture. I mean, we have a copy of it, of course. That's the exercise we go through, is making sure that it meets that and the town code. But the CC&Rs is a different conversation.
Yeah.
So can you take me through when someone, let's pretend someone's coming with their RV and a family member, they're getting ready to drop off their RV. How does that work? Where will they park?
Sure. So the RV area is gated. It's walled and gated. So they'll both get through there. And I think what would happen is they would both enter into the RV parking area. The RV would park. The person would hop out, get into the car, and they would drive away.
So I guess what I'm saying is, you know, one of my concerns is and they're the first time going to drop their RV off. Are they going to go to the main building and both park there? Is there going to be enough parking? What I'm trying to avoid is having RVs and family members in my lot. Can the CCRCs be adjusted to say that we are not sharing parking? I know that's something Mr. Andros mentioned to me that he would be interested in, is not having shared parking.
So, again, sorry to give you the same answer I gave before, but the CC&Rs are literally just a contract between the property owners and the association. So we can't enforce those. We don't rule on those. Now, we will look at them to make sure they don't violate zoning code, but that would be a conversation that you guys would have amongst yourselves to see if that's something that the entire association would support.
I believe that what the CC&Rs say is that it allowed cross-parking. So you can reserve 75% for you in the lots cross parking. It does have, and I'm just going to say I'm not positive, but I believe that there is a thing that you can say I can reserve 100%, which also means that you cannot park on anybody else.
So do I have to get a lawyer to do that?
No. When we sent him the CC&R,
because here's the thing, the HOA is kind of non-existent, and it's being run by the main owner of the lot who owns, you know, 9 of the lots or 8 of the
lots. Actually it's an independent, there's no death warrant right now. So that's, now voting is set up that depending on how much land you have more, your vote weighs more, of course. But that's true across that's true across board. But the HOA is the community of the property owners.
Mission management.
And they have board meetings. I think a lot of times nobody goes to them, but they do go where you can voice concerns and that sort of thing. Yeah.
So if I might recommend, if we could just focus back on the actual application at hand. I mean, I'm sure it sounds like there's certainly a conversation.
I'd be happy to be
more involved, absolutely. But if there's other questions about this, I know Mayor Loomis, it looked like you might have had some more questions. Or
Mike.
Sir, you didn't ask a question yet. If you had one.
What's your length limit on your RV parking? What's the allowable length that you're going to allow parking
at? Sure. Dale, do you remember the maximum length on the RVs?
Length?
Yeah. So it just I don't have that answer right here, but it on here the drive lanes within the RV area are 40 feet wide, so those spaces are longer than that. So something
40,
more than 40, yeah. And I can if you want to give me your contact, I can email you that tomorrow. I just don't have that exact figure for me.
And that's not something that the town necessarily would restrict. They, as the designer of their parking lot, have to make sure that it functions safely, right?
Right. I'm so, wondering if you're not going to squeeze a 45-footer to make that corner and
right.
Get inside that lot.
So they'll have to obviously be cognizant of that when they're trying to rent stuff for folks. But we don't have a restriction, I guess, is my point.
Has anybody done the that layout for a long and looking at your inner corners and trying to get in and around your RV parking? It looks like it's going to be pretty tight if somebody is on the end spaces.
You know what issue you were in?
The area that I'm
the engineers did. They did the auto turn.
The lighting. And I'm not sure what the lighting is on the back of the Target stores and stuff like that at night. And I know that you have to try and maintain the dark skies elements, but with all of this area, what are they doing about lighting and floodlights around the RV area and the building? The building I'm less concerned about than the RV area, since that's all open and it's reflective.
You're asking about the internal or the external RV? Okay. As far as the lighting goes around the RV area, it'll be lit inside, but in a way that's screened from neighboring properties, but is adequate enough to provide security. I mean, they're going to have cameras there as well. And then along the outside, I'm not sure, actually. I mean, those are private streets. We're not proposing lighting along the outside of that wall at this point.
So have you done a paper mache run or a simulation with the largest size RV?
Yeah, they did the turning movement template through there to make sure that you can get in and out and park. And it was John, right?
Mm-hmm.
So just to kind of circle back to the question you asked about the first-time RV visitor, I imagine it would happen one of two ways. One is if they were going there to rent a space, they probably wouldn't show up with their RV the first time. They'd probably just drive. And there's lots of customer parking over here by the office. If they did, once they go there to actually drop off the RV, they'll probably already have permission to go in the gate because they will have already made the reservation. If for some reason they did show up, with the RV to make their initial reservation, I think they'd probably pull the RV into this loading area and then park their normal civilian vehicle over here by the office. And then once all the paperwork was taken care of, they'd both head on in. So it would be really inconvenient to park at your place.
I would add, you know, that loading zone along the main drive there is being preserved as part of this application, as Mr. Olin indicated. So because that loading zone was originally designed to serve five or six different buildings, and it's not anymore. If this is approved, it would be serving essentially the self-storage facility and the RV storage, right? So I don't anticipate that that's going to be highly utilized outside of a scenario like this Roland indicated. So it should be available for folks if they do happen to show up in their RV.
So what are my, if let's say after this is built, the auto place parks all of their cars in the lot across from my building?
Sure.
What do I do then? You would notify us,
and so that's where we're in. We're still working through this, so I don't have the finite details on exactly what that's going to entail, but it's going to boil down to there will be conditions on their conditional use permit that say, you know, certain things, including there will be no off-site parking allowed. So when you're redesigning this, to accommodate some of that excess vehicle storage you have, whatever you make space for, that's what you're allowed to keep. And then if you have more than that and it's flowing over to your lot, that's going to be a zoning violation. And so we as the town have the ability to go in and assess fines. Typically, with the threat of fines, folks are more than willing to work with the town to try and find a resolution. In a worst-case scenario, if we can't get a resolution, then we can send them to court. So, yes, we absolutely have a process, which is what we're going through right now with the existing zoning violation. Because there's a violation out there, we're working with them to redesign their site to address that, hopefully entirely. If not, that's going to be incumbent upon them to find another place to store their vehicles somewhere else. I hope that answers your question. All right. Well, I mean, we're scheduled to go until 7:30, so if anybody has other questions, I'd be happy to answer them, or Ms. Rowland, I'm sure, would. And, of course, if not, we'll make ourselves available afterwards and other conversations that may be had. Just as a reminder, moving forward, we do anticipate that, well, of course, I'm on the wrong presentation, but that's okay. We do anticipate that this will be going to commission on March 7th, so please keep an eye out for yellow postcards. I know you've gotten them already, and the stickers on the yellow signs out there will be updated to reflect that as well. So I appreciate everyone's time. Hope you guys have a good evening.
Thank you.
Thank you.